Hello everyone, I'm Zisi. I'm a student of Hasidus aspiring to live a God-centered life, while also mothering, staying present, and holding on to creativity and drive. Each month, I'm exploring where these ideals meet through the lens of Hasidic thought. Let's probe the heights and return grounded as we navigate standing between earth and sky. We are up to the final part of our three-part series on the Jewish mothers. And we'll be talking about Rachel and Leah together. Rachel and Leah are sisters. And as we mentioned previously when we were discussing Sarah and Rivka, there are some very perplexing parts of these stories. But when we took these perplexing details in the stories and used them as springboards to explore deeper into the character of these women, we were able to gain a much deeper understanding of what was really going on over here. So these questions that come up are really like road signs saying, hey, stop here, explore deeper over here. There is more to the story than what meets the eye. There are layers and layers of understanding and truth contained within these stories. So we're going to explore today two, what we might call sister wives, Rachel and Leah. We ended last episode with Rivka coordinating that Yaakov should go and snatch the blessings from his brother Esav. And he does so, and because of this, he needs to run away because Esav is very angry and he fears for his life. And so his mother sends him to her brother, Lavan, who lives in Haran. And Lavan has two daughters, Leah and Rachel. And Yaakov meets Rachel first. He meets her at the well, which seems to be the popular singles meeting location in Tanakh. And he sees Rachel there and he kisses her. And he's just immediately drawn to her. And he goes to her father, to Lavan, and asks to marry her, and he promises to work 7 years for Lavan as sort of a bride. And now Lavan is known for his trickery, and he makes this little switcheroo, and he puts Leah under the chuppah instead of Rachel, and Yaakov proceeds to see that he has married the wrong sister, the wrong woman. And a week later, he marries Rachel, and he promises to work an additional 7 years, marry Rachel. And the language that the Torah says is that Yaakov loves Rachel, and Hashem sees that Leah is not loved. And it's quite heartbreaking to think about Leah sort of being inserted into this relationship between Yaakov and Rachel and not being the loved one, not being the favored wife. And it can be difficult for us to understand how Yaakov, who is such a great tzaddik, such a holy man, he's sort of removed from a certain physical reality. So what does it mean that he loves Rachel more than Leah? And to understand this, we're going to do something similar to what we did in the previous two episodes, exploring the roots of the souls of Rachel and Leah. Because as we mentioned, as the mothers and fathers of our nation, the Avos and Imahos are archetypes. And from these archetypes, all of our souls are derived. So let's explore the roots of Leah and Rachel. So, the Torah refers to Leah and Rachel as Hagadola, the older one, meaning Leah, and Hakatana, the younger one, meaning Rachel. We can read these words a little bit differently. We can read these words as Hey Gadola and Hey Katana, the big Hey and the small Hey. When we look at Hashem's name, the name of Yud and a Hey and above and a Hey, there is the first Hey, which is known as Hey Gadola, the big Hey, and the second Hey, which is known as Hey Katana, the small Hey. The big Hey embodies Bina. The big Hey represents The process and the world of understanding. After an idea is first conceived, after we go through the process of chachma, which is the initial conception of an idea, when we have a flash of inspiration, a flash of creativity, the seeds of understanding something, we then move into the bina process. The bina process is the expansion of the idea, testing the boundaries of the idea. How far does this idea go? What is the structure of this idea or this creative spark? What form does it take on? How can it be fleshed out? How can it be expressed within our own brains? This is the process of bina. Bina is a process of analysis, but it's an internal process that takes place inside of a person, and that is Leia. Leia is Hagadelah, the older one, the big He, the first He, Bina, the world of thought. And the world of thought is primarily hidden. It is not open. It is not expressed. It is concealed within the mind. Rachel is the He Katana, the small He, and this refers to the second He in Hashem's name, which represents Malchus. The He is the embodiment of Malchus. Malchus is the power of speech. Rachel is all about sharing. We know that when a concept is able to be expressed through speech, that means it's gone through an intense process of being fully worked through and formulated. And finally, when I have a good grasp on my thoughts, I am then able to express them through speech. Speech is an outward motion. Rachel is compared to Alma de Iscalia, the revealed world. She is a sharer. She is an expressor. So while Leah's soul root is much more introverted and internal, Rachel's soul root is much more extroverted and outward facing. If we would apply these two modes into our service of Hashem, Leah represents the service of Hashem that is accomplished in an inward way, primarily through Torah study. Torah study is an internal process where a person is busy with analysis, and it's all about within the world of understanding of the person. Versus Rachel represents the mitzvahs that are accomplished through speech and action, which again are outward facing. It's not about internal transformation, but external output. Many mitzvahs are accomplished through our speech. We make brachos before we do many mitzvahs, which are all in the world of speech, and as well as with our bodies and interacting with the world. And that is all accomplished through these outward motions. It's interesting that we see this also be expressed in Leah and Rachel's children. Leah's sons are shepherds. They are in the field with their sheep. They live in a world of thought, apart from society, away from the mundane world. We see many of our forefathers were shepherds because it's a good job for someone who wants to be able to be lost in their own world, in their own thoughts, involved in, it's like externally maybe you're taking care of the animals, but internally there's all this space for contemplation and for sort of being a little bit more removed from the world. Versus Rachel's son, Yosef, becomes the second to the king in Mitzrayim. He's in this position of leadership in Egypt, and he is in a very forward-facing role, immersed in governance and communicating, sharing, very much in that world of expressed speech, much more extroverted role than the shepherds who have this much more internal, introverted role. And we see these two modes actually expressed as well in two different eras that the Jewish people have lived through. There was the Temple era, which was a time of great revelation of godliness. And our service of Hashem was accomplished in a very external way. The Shekhinah was obvious and revealed. The land was filled with open, obvious, divine inspiration and prophecy. If you have a question, you can go to a Navi. You can come to the Beis HaMikdash. You can consult with the Urim, the Tumim. There's daily miracles occurring. The heavenly fire comes down and consumes Carbonus and countless other miracles that are occurring on a regular basis. And so the experience of godliness is actually on a very external level. There's this great experience of godliness. And the emphasis was on the ritual observance and a lot less on Torah study. Because if we think about most of the Torah that we learned, the whole Torah she'bal peh that was developed during the time, obviously, this was oral tradition that was passing down even during the temple years, but this whole development of the Torah she'bal peh, of the Mishnah and Gemara, only happens after the temple is destroyed. And then we enter into this second era of Jewish life, where on some level, Torah study really takes the central role. And we are known throughout the world as being focused on education, learning and advancing in our education, and being maybe a little bit more, there's less open revelation from God. And therefore, we move more into that slightly more internal connection with Hashem that comes through Torah study. Now, we say that Yaakov loves Rachel. Why is it that Yaakov loves Rachel? Yaakov knows that he has a mission to fulfill in this world. We've spoken a bit about how Avram represents boundless chesed and Yitzchak represents intensive gevura. Yaakov is the brea chatichon, the middle pole, the pole that extends from one end to the other. He is the bridge between the chesed and gevura. He's the merging of the two, which is called Tiferes. And additionally, he is the merging of the spiritual world and the greatest spiritual revelation with the physical world. He knows that his job is to draw down revelation from super, super, super high levels of godliness and bring it all the way down into the physical world. And he meets Rachel and he sees that she is the perfect partner to accomplish this. Rachel is speech expression, Malchus. Malchus reaches the lowest points of creation. Malchus expresses outward to other people, to physical objects that can be elevated through our interacting with them. So the attraction of Rachel, the attraction of Alma de Iscalia, the revealed world, is that Yaakov knows by merging with Rachel and connecting with Rachel, he can bring the loftiest levels of holiness into the lowest places and accomplish his mission. But we see that he has to marry Leah as well. Even though Yaakov's mission is to elevate the physical world, not to be removed like a shepherd that does not interact with the world, but to enter into the world and to interact with the world and to fix the world through his interactions with it. At the same time, his marriage to Leah acknowledges the need for the world of thought as well, for the world of study, for the world of transcendence, and that it is possible to balance the two. It is possible to be immersed fully within the world and have a part of you that also remains above, remains transcendent, remains tethered to heaven. And in fact, if we want our speech and our expression to be most effective, we also need to have the space for the inward work. We also need to have the space for the internal work, for the contemplation, for the study, so that our inner worlds become so rich. And the speech is only as effective and rich as the inner world that it is coming from. We live in a world where external flashiness always wins. Even when we're learning and educating ourselves, how much of our information comes from these quick little sound bites or quotations that we see online, a meme, somebody posts their thoughts about something with utmost authority, but because it's wrapped in a beautiful external package and is flashy and fits with the algorithm, it's seen by thousands of people, and it attracts a ton of attention, and it's able to have this far-reaching effect. And this has become one of our primary modes of receiving information, of learning and interacting with the world and with each other. And this is the power of Rachel energy, of that external energy, and being able to have this incredible influence. Rachel is the influencer. It's attractive. It translates well. It's beautiful. Imagine the power that we can have with this reach. Imagine the power that we can have with this attractiveness. We can transform the world. We can bring in millions of people. And Leia is the argument for long-form content as well. That if we only have the little soundbite and we only have the little infographic, or you only have the inspiring quote, but then you don't go back in and immerse yourself in the idea for itself, or maybe taking back a step, if the creator of that short form content is not filled up with the depth of the idea to begin with. And the depth of their own understanding only goes as far as the quote. Then how much richness are we missing out on? The hidden world contains endless depths and allows us to connect to something that is deep and real. So I think this is a unique challenge of the time that we are living in. Being able to marry the inner world and the outer world, the hidden world and the revealed world. Ideas, projects, initiatives, charity has the potential to reach so much further than ever before, but also has the potential to be so much more superficial than ever before, with all of its glamour and all of its glitz and all of its beauty and all of its influence. And so, with all of the beauty of Rachel, we can't abandon Leia. We can't abandon the tradition of depth, the tradition of meaning, the tradition of internalness, inwardness, the tradition of taking time to invest, of allowing the short form content to attract us, but then using that as a springboard to go deeper and as a springboard to dive in and explore and open up our minds and open up our hearts and expand our focus and expand our scope. So Rachel and Leia, as these sister wives, both essential to the purpose of reality, both essential to the birth of the Jewish nation, the inwardness of thought, the influence of speech, and the necessity of both, so that we have thoughtful speech, thoughtful influence, rich, deep, but also beautiful and attractive expression. And with the marriage of these two, we can ultimately transform ourselves and the world.